Welcome to Retrospective Radio. I am Jason Mann, and with me is the ever-inquisitive Josh Hatchett.
Wow. I would go from a hardcore legend to inquisitive, so I've got mind and the brute.
Hey, there you go, yeah.
It's a lethal combination. All right. Watch out.
I do every day. All right, well, you know, this is just kind of a half of a Q&A show and half of a Jason just wants a rant about stuff show. So
always a good show.
I hope so. You know, I'm looking forward to the show and hopefully we'll just you know, have a good old time discussing some interesting topics. First thing that I want to get into real quick is this Stand Up for WWE campaign. Basically, the deal is that WWE started this campaign trying to get its fans behind it because it feels that its critics are unfairly blast WWE for all these evil things that WWE does. And, you know,
basically...
Poor WWE. Yeah, poor WWE because, you know, multi-billionaire companies, they just don't have the same kind of voice that they used to have, mm-hmm. you know. In politics and the media, yes. You know, poor lonely WWE, just yes. All the critics pile on it.
Just barely getting by.
Barely, yeah. I mean, it's amazing that they can survive this kind of poisonous atmosphere.
I know, it's rough. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, and okay, I am not going to say that no journalist has ever, like, not done their research when it comes to wrestling, or, you know... There are people, individuals out there who have written things that are unfair about WWE. Of course, you know, everyone has had someone, you know, treat them poorly or write something about them that either, you know, wasn't true or was, you know, fudged to fit like a particular point of view. But, you know, WWE is not, it's not like they're getting like an onslaught of critical press.
Yeah,
it's not like the media is out there like digging deeply into, you know, into what's been going on. Yes. Now, you know, granted, there's been a political campaign for the Senate over the, you know, last year or 6 months or whatever that Linda McMahon's been involved in. And yes, WWE has been under some extra scrutiny for, you know, some of its business practices, for wrestlers dying, for, you know, its adult content in the late 90s, early 2000s. That sort of thing.
But even that hasn't been, you know, as hard-hitting or it hasn't blown up as much as it could have, you know, could have been. You know, in politics, you know, everything's pretty much, you know, free reign. You know? And it still hasn't even been, you know, that huge of a deal. I mean, yeah. If you read, you know, the Wrestling Observer, it talks about, you know, what this campaign is doing. But on a national level or you know, mainstream level, it's not at all.
Right. I mean, you know, outside of some Connecticut newspapers and a couple of New York Times articles, I just don't see this, like, this huge, like, wall of, like, massive, like, unfair criticism, like, launched against them from any, like, major source, you know? It's all, like, it's either people who understand the wrestling business, you know, are saying, you know, things that are pretty reasonable and pretty logical, you know, wondering about, like, hey, why did, you know, WWE suspend their drug program for 10 years and continue to have it suspended when wrestlers started dropping left and right, you know, of, mm-hmm. you know, of wellness issues, you know? And that's, you know, it's a reasonable question to ask. I mean, I know they instituted a program, you know, after Eddie Guerrero died, and they obviously made changes to it after the Benoit murder-suicide. But, you know, I think it's fair to ask, like, you know, hey, what took you guys so long? I don't think WWE's ever, you know, answered that question to anyone's satisfaction, you know, in any way that, like, you know, makes, like, reasonable sense.
No.
And I feel like WWE's and pro wrestling has largely evaded public scrutiny in any major sense, you know. Obviously, you know, after the Benoit situation, that did change for a while, and they, you know, there was, you know, investigation in Congress, and they all, you know, testified to committees, and there's been some really good posts on the Cage Side Seats blog, which I highly recommend checking out, where they've gone into some of the testimony that was given during those hearings, and kind of basically, you know, looked at a lot of different points that were made by different company officials and by the doctor who was administrating the program, and, you know, raising some really interesting questions, and that, you know, haven't really not been scrutinized at all.
Yeah, I mean, even with that, it didn't seem like they got the, you know, that much, you know, bad press. I mean, they got a lot of it, but it didn't seem like it really affected them in a major way that it could have.
There was definitely, like, the tabloidy, you know, like, cable news press during the Benoit years. I mean, that was all over, no question about that. But it's not like, you know, I mean, I don't get this mentality from WWE that, like, the world is like, against us. And it's like...
It's all. I hate that. You're right. I hate that.
It's like whining and complaining, and then like expecting like your fan, you know, like trying to like brainwash your fans into like supporting this bogus campaign. And you know what? There's real problems in this world. Yeah. You know, there's stuff to like stand behind. I mean, the day just ended, but you know, but yesterday was a day to you know, sort of a day of remembrance for, you know, people who have been bullied, and you know, people people who are bullied for being different, for being gay, who, you know, have taken abuse and bullying, and to try to like remember them after there's been like a lot of, you know, violent incidents, you know, that they've had to deal with. There's people who, you know, struggle with disease, who struggle with famine, who struggle with war, you know, all these things. These are real things to stand behind. This, we're in the National Breast Cancer Month to, you know, dealing with people like that. There's so many things that are worth people's time. You know, pro wrestling, worrying about people's perception of pro wrestling is not worth your time, even if people view it unfairly. And some people certainly do. Some people don't understand. But you know what? Why should they understand? Yeah. Like, what? You know, I don't need to understand what other people like. You know, I mean, I don't need to understand why people like NASCAR. You know, who cares what I think about NASCAR? You know, I think it's silly. But why would a NASCAR fan worry about what somebody like me thinks? Mm-hmm. You know, why do wrestling fans need wrestling to suddenly like be like, you know, like mainstream, acceptable, happy entertainment? I mean, I understand why WWE wants it to be viewed that way, but why should wrestling fans care? I mean, I guess, you know, I guess some of them don't want to get made fun of for liking wrestling or whatever, but you know, how much do you really, do people really get made fun of for watching wrestling for?
It's been major mainstream entertainment
for 25 years. I mean, yeah, in some circles it's a joke or whatever, but you know, do people really, you know, do you get like onslaughts of people like making fun of you constantly for liking pro wrestling? People don't care, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they don't like it. Maybe they make jokes about it, but whatever. It's just silly.
Well, and I hate how they, you know, this whole thing, you know, and another issues as well, where WWE portrays themselves as this, you know, small, you know, little guy, underdog type character that's trying to rise up against, you know, the big bad media or you know, the big bad, you know, companies that reject them.
Or the big bad, you know, big bad Time Warner that, you know, try to put them out of business. You know.
I mean, you know, quit treating your fans like, you know, they're idiots or they're robots, you know. You know, every wrestling fan, every WWE fan is allowed to form their own opinions, and it's not automatically going to agree with everything you do. It's not, you know, stand up for, you know, you like the WWE, so stand up for WWE with this. You know, it's just silly stuff, and the way they portray it just makes, you know, just is insulting to me in one sense, because they're not just some little, you know, underdog in the corner trying to make a name for themselves. You know, they're a huge, you know, billion-dollar business that's doing well,
and they're the dominant. They're the dominant. You know, they're number one by a mile in professional wrestling. There's obviously, you know, UFC competition, but that's a whole separate issue. But what I'm saying is, the business that they're in, they are number one. They're not under attack. No one is trying to close them down. Mm-hmm. You know, they're you know, the public perception of them may not always be great, but you know what? It's not like
it's not going to affect them.
It's not like people. It's not like people are. It's not like there's some massive campaign of unfairness against WWE, and it's stupid. And I'm sad that there are people who I respect, who I've talked to, who kind of buy into this in at least a little bit, if not like a lot. And I understand, you know, you love pro wrestling, you want to, you know, you love WWE for whatever reason, that's fine. You know, you're allowed to love WWE, but it's just, you know, understand what this is about before you go out and be like, yeah, I support the WWE campaign.
Yeah, don't get snookered into, you know, this is, you know,
right.
You know, this is some noble thing that they're trying to get you to rally behind.
Right. And you know, and if you're running with, you know, with eyes clear and you understand, you know, the criticisms WWE takes and, you know, and their answers to them. And if those satisfy you and you're fine with it, then, you know, go ahead, you know, that's fine. But just, you know, just be educated and understand it before you, you know, suddenly, you know, before you join this campaign, just because you like pro wrestling.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So agreed.
All right. Second thing I want to rant about today, WWE.com put together a list of the top 25 talkers in history.
Based on what they came up with, how long do you think it took them to compile this list? 10
minutes? I would guess. You know, it's interesting. Like the list is like it's mixed with like basically probably half are like wrestlers with like a historic reputation for being good promos, and by historic I mean last 25, 30 years, with maybe like one exception.
Yeah,
and then. The other half is modern guys who are considered good talkers. And it's sort of like, it's like randomly, like it's, you know, new guy, legend, new guy, legend, new guy, legend, current guy, old guy, current guy, old guy, old guy. You know, it's a, the way it's grouped, it's very much like a, you know, split in, you know, they kind of go back 1-to-1-to-1-to-1, you know.
Well, you know, it's like, well, we have to include some of these new guys, so
yeah,
let's make ourselves look silly and put them in there.
Yeah, and I want to read the description of this because I'm amused by WWE corporate speak, so I'm just going to read. Think talk is cheap? Try telling that to the 25 superstars on this list. From an arrogant former reality TV star with an attitude problem to a wildly charismatic plumber's son, these men have packed arenas and glued millions of fans to television screens with their unique ability to inspire passion, fear, anger, and laughter through their captivating interviews. Nearly every superstar has ever set foot in a WWE ring has spoken on the microphone, but these 25 men were the best at it. The best.
The best, yes.
The best.
The best ever.
Okay.
The best of all time.
The best of all time.
Every wrestler that has been in WWE or WCW, this is the best list of talkers of all time.
Of all time. Number 25, Sheamus. Now, okay. Sheamus
to a roaring start.
Sheamus is a good talker. I mean, you know, no one on this list is a bad talker, but I don't know. Sheamus, yeah, really? Okay.
That's bad.
24, Rick Rude. Now, I don't know. Rick Rude, I mean, good talker, but I'm not sure Rick Rude really would belong on this list either. His inclusion kind of puzzles me, actually. Yeah. But 23, Rick Rude was good at insulting crowds. Actually, you know, Rick Rude was a really good talker. I'm going to back that up. He does belong on this list.
Yeah.
23, Santino Marella.
He does not belong on this list.
No. And Santino was funny, especially as a baby, or especially as a heel, but yeah.
I would be interested in seeing if you could come up with 25 better talkers in this current state of wrestling today. I bet you could.
Perhaps, yeah. I guess if you include TNA guys, Well, actually, a lot of these guys are actually still active, so you know, I guess it wouldn't be that hard. But
that's awful.
Okay, 22, the Million Dollar Man. I can accept this.
Yes.
Yeah, Ted DiBiase, great talker, great character. The fact that they have to call him a Million Dollar Man and not Ted DiBiase is a little annoying, but you know, whatever. He does have his crappy son, you know, so
yeah.
Got to keep his name. 21, The Miz. Yeah, you know, the Miz is fine. You know, I don't know. You know, 25 talkers of all time to stretch, but whatever. You know, again, you know, obviously they're gonna include their current guys. It's not, he's been around at least for a few years and had fame, you know, before it as a good talker. So I can accept this a little more. Certainly not. Certainly ahead of Sheamus.
I cannot.
You can't accept the Miz?
I can't accept this at all.
Okay. All right. No? All right. Well, fair enough. Okay. Number 20, Jesse Ventura. Jesse Ventura, a great talker. Probably actually deserves to be higher, but whatever. 19, Triple H. Triple H is ahead of Jesse Ventura. Yes. Boring 20-minute promo, dull as all get out for years, Triple H. Triple H can be funny. He's better as a babyface, but can you think of like a really like intense like money promo that Triple H has done, like one that like, you know, like really like, you know, like, you know, got under your skin and just like, you know, wow, that Triple H, you know, he certainly talked me into that match, you know?
Well, remember that that time where he walked out for his entrance music and then he spit all that water all over the place before he got into the ring?
Okay. I remember that. I remember that specific time.
Okay. That was pretty sweet.
That was cool. Yeah. It doesn't have so much to do with talking, but that's okay. I mean, maybe they're counting. Maybe they're just like talking about like,
I mean, that makes a noise.
With your mouth. Exactly. Yeah. He made a noise with his mouth when he spit. So that makes it number 19.
Okay.
Number 18, Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman, great talker. I think, you know, that's fine. I you can probably make an argument for 25. Notice that Jim Cornette is not on this list.
Yes.
Which, you know, I know Jim Cornette is not somebody who WWF is a big fan of, but pretty hard for you not to include Jim Cornette on a greatest promo ever list. Because Jim Cornette's life, his entire life is a promo.
Yes, exactly.
And, you know, he's fantastic at it. So,
Yeah,
he should be higher than Paul Heyman should be. But, you know, like I said, I'm not against Paul Heyman being on this list. Edge. Number 17.
Yeah, I'll pass on that one.
Yeah, Edge is fine, but I mean, he's a good promo. It's not, not completely ridiculous, but, you know, not great.
Not great at all.
Number 16, Mr. McMahon. I have no problem with Mr. McMahon.
No problem.
15, Superstar Billy Graham. Great promos. Listening to some of them now, they feel like almost like a parody, but mm-hmm. they were innovative. Well, maybe not innovative because he was just kind of copying Muhammad Ali and other guys, but they were, you know, they were different. It made him a big star. So,
that's fine. For historical purposes, I think that's,
Number 14, Mick Foley. Also, Mick Foley, one of the greatest, probably belongs in the top 10, but, you know, but nothing, you know, ridiculous about that. Hulk Hogan, number 13. Great promo. I don't think he's quite. I think 13 is a little high, but because I think he had the great charisma, but I'm not sure like the content of his promos ever really like, you know, blew me away.
But anything he said, everyone ate up. So.
Just
the way he delivered it, I guess. Even as simplistic as it was.
Yeah, I'll concede that. Number 12, CM Punk. You're laughing. Oh, I mean, CM Punk's a very good promo. Even better than very good. I mean, he's a great promo. But 12th of all time, you know. I mean,
he's ahead of Hulk Hogan, Mick Foley, Mr. McMahon,
Superstar Graham,
and Jesse Ventura.
Jesse Ventura, yeah, he's ahead of all those guys. Yes, yeah. So the only guy that you can make any argument he's ahead of of those guys is Rick Rude. So Number 11, Randy Savage. I love Randy Savage's promos, although they didn't always make sense, but it doesn't matter because, you know, he delivered them with incredible intensity and was great. So, yes. No problem with that. Number 10, JBL. Great talker, even better color commentator. I think he's,
He's good, but that's way too high.
That's high. He might belong in the top 25, but 10 might be high. Number 9, Bobby Heenan. Bobby Heenan probably belongs in top 5.
Yeah.
Number 8, Dusty Rhodes. That's about right.
Yeah.
Number 7, John Cena. Now, John Cena's a good talker, although the content of his promos is often awful. You know,
If you're 10 to 13, I think he's a good promo.
Okay, well, you know, he can certainly...
Sometimes he can, you know, when he's super intense.
I mean, he, at his best promos are awesome.
Yeah.
His worst promos are terrible.
Yeah.
But his best ones are awesome, so I consider him, you know, he has the ability of a great talker. Who's an athlete who like would show you like great potential in flashes, but then would like suck like a lot of time. Vince Carter.
Yes. Yeah, yes. That'd be a good one. Yeah.
Okay. John Cena's like Vince Carter, yes. Where, you know, at his peak, he's awesome, but, you know, he also, like, I don't know if it's Cena's problem so much as he's lazy, but, you know, it's definitely, he
lazy has, writing, perhaps.
Yeah, lazy writing, maybe just, I think the problem is that John Cena has, like, the world's worst sense of humor.
Yes.
So let's see the description for young Mr. Cena. In his earliest interviews, John Cena was all swagger. A young hip-hop head with the uncanny ability to sling a rhyme, the former WWE champion became wildly popular due to his hilarious freestyles. But as the legendary, quote-unquote, movie star matured, so did his confidence behind the microphone. And his cocky wordplay soon gave way to intense, passionate speeches. Stern and direct, Cena has the ability to inspire an audience like a military general. Wow. But like any great talker, he can also crack a joke at the most unexpected moment, effortlessly mixing style and substance. Cena has earned his spot among the greatest talkers of all time.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's inspiring right there.
Yes.
That's some prose.
Speaking of Cena and these silly rhymes and raps that he used to do. One of the funniest things that was, not meant to be funny, was the music video he did, or he released, and it was on one of the DVDs. I can't remember. Might have been like Armageddon 2005 or something like that.
Okay.
It was one of the worst like songs/videos. I've ever seen.
Was it, so I assume it was off his album?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. Was it Bad Bad Man? That was one. That was it.
It was something about, like, all the people he grew up with. And the video was, like, him having a fun barbecue.
Oh, I vaguely remember that. I don't know the name of the song.
You should YouTube the John Cena video and find that because it's quite hilarious.
Okay.
Because they're just so bad.
Okay. Anyway.
Yeah. Okay. So he's not in my top 10.
No, he's not in my top 10 either.
To sum things up.
Okay. Number 6, Jake Roberts. That's fine. I would put him below Dusty Rhodes or Bobby Heenan, but
yeah.
Chris Jericho, also fine, but I would put him below Dusty or Heenan.
Mm-hmm.
Ric Flair, number 4. I would probably put him. I'd probably put Flair as number 1.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Rock, who's listed number 3, I would probably put him at number 2.
I agree.
Roddy Piper, who was number 2, I would probably put as 3. I'd put him top 5.
Mm-hmm.
Austin, who is number 1, I would put, like, I'd probably put 6th.
Yeah.
I'd probably put him below Dusty or Heenan, and Rock and Flair. Maybe I'm not sure if I'd put him ahead or behind Piper, but that would be about the spot I would put him in.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, no, overall, you know, the top 10, other than Cena being included, you know, you can argue the order. There's probably guys you could probably consider including. I would think, you know, Jim Cornette probably, yeah, would be on my list. But
yeah.
But anyway, so,
and there's a lot of guys. You know, I was just thinking about this as we were going through this, but a lot of guys they left off. You know, Kurt Angle, Terry Funk.
Oh, Terry Funk, Jerry Lawler. Jerry Lawler. Oh, yeah, yeah. Gosh, Jerry Lawler
works in our company. Bret Hart.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Bret Hart really developed into a great promo. You know, somebody who they'd never list, but who was, you know, Shane Douglas, obviously,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great talkers. Yeah. Shawn Michaels, you know, particularly at his best points, even certainly better than Triple H. I mean,
yes.
Yeah, 100 times better than Triple H.
Yeah. Or Santino.
Yeah. not that Santino belongs in this list, but it's a style where, you know, obviously he has the fake accent and he's doing comedy and all that.
Yeah.
But, he was, for a while, he was very amusing.
Mm-hmm.
And, it was a good character and, you know, But no, he does not belong on this list. You know,
even Eddie Guerrero. I mean, he was.
Yeah,
he was a good promo. I guess he didn't really have...
He developed into one, but that took a long time.
Yeah,
he wasn't. I mean, of course, a lot of these guys were not that good at it at first. But he, I mean, it took him. You know, even he was a good promo the last 2-3 years of his career. He wasn't really that good before then.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. So that's. I mean, I'm not like. You know, I was angry about the WWE campaign. This I'm more just mildly baffled.
Yes,
I guess. So yeah. You know, that was less of a rant and more of something else that I can't determine. I am not among the top 25 talkers in the history of anything. So I think that should be pretty perfectly clear by the time if you've listened to enough of these podcasts. You know, I think the rambling is part of my charm.
I agree.
Yeah. In fact, we there was somebody who complained that I ramble too much and stutter too much and other things like that. Which,
well, they just don't get it.
Well, I mean, you know, rambling or stuttering and saying a lot of you knows and ums. I'm willing to concede that that's not good radio. But you know, my rambling, damn it, that's who I am. That's yes. Part of my charm.
Well, I would say you're in the top 25 of retrospective podcast hosts. So.
Yeah, well, thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah.
So there you go.
Awesome.
There's a list.
That's an honor. That is an honor.
Yes.
All right. Well, we went to Twitter to see if we could if there were any other topics that we could rant about, and so we got a few. Ringside Excess wants us to talk about Matt Hardy's latest announcement of possibly starting his own dirt sheet. So, Matt Hardy, that's a... He's a guy, yeah.
You think he would eat his dirt sheet?
Oh, still with the Matt Hardy fat jokes?
Yes.
We're still doing that?
We still are.
Okay. Of course, I don't know how tasty eating a dirt sheet would be.
Well, I don't know. I don't think he'd have a problem.
Okay, well...
I'm going to keep them coming.
All right, Josh, you know what? What I like about you is your consistency. That's right. You know, you've got a lot of consistency. That's important. Okay, it sounds about as stupid as anything Matt Hardy has said over the past few months.
Just sour grapes. It's just going to come
across the sour grapes. Oh, yes, sour grapes. That's good. I like that one was better. See, that was had some wit there you showed. Yes. That's nice. Making a nice reference to one of Matt's infamous promos.
But don't you think, I mean, it's just going to come across as that. I mean, no one's going to take it seriously.
Yeah, Matt Hardy's not going to start it under a cheat.
Yeah,
so,
it's dumb. Yeah.
You know, I don't think he's going to do the work to, you know, I mean, he's actually made a few valid points about some of the reporting on a couple of them. I will say that is, you know, for all the things he's ranted and raved about, at least he did, you know, he made a couple of decent points about some of the criticisms he made of some of the famous, you know, the Wrestling Observer, Pro Wrestling Torch, and the other sites that do that sort of thing.
What was that? I didn't.
He was sort of critiquing about, you know, how they did some of the reporting, and it was like one of the first things he did after he was sent home, and it was actually a fairly reasoned, balanced critique. I don't remember exactly what he said now, but I mean, you know, when I wrote it, I was expecting him to be like, you know, crazy, insane, and really stupid and over the top, and I was hoping I'd have something to make fun of. But then it ended up being like fairly like benign, so I was a little disappointed in him because you know the more Matt Hardy the more crazy the Matt Hardy, you know, the more fun it is.
Yes.
So, the next question is from Dean Stahl, who asks: it may be a very overrun topic, but what about sensible booking of matches and building of stars? Also, I'm repeatedly confused by what TNA thinks they're doing with their show and how anyone there can call it a good product. So,
correct.
Yes, you're right, Dean. TNA is, you know, I tried to watch, I have my DVR can only tape two things at once.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that's on is whatever NBC comedy's on, I think The Office.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing that on is Grey's Anatomy, which my wife watches, and I do not. So basically, I cannot DVR the first hour of Impact. But I can, I've started taping the second hour of Impact and then taping Reaction. And this week it started on the Jeff Jarrett, Kurt Angle promo. And I could barely get through that. It's just the way they were talking. Like, everyone knew what they were talking about because everyone reads the internet and everyone knows that Jeff Jarrett, you know, married Kurt Angle's ex-wife, who, by the way, hasn't been on TV in like 3 years. So, you know, if anyone new has decided to watch TNA since 2007, good luck knowing who, you know, who they're talking about, who she is. Yeah, who she is, because they don't say her name. And it's just, I don't know, Kurt saying, like, oh, you can have that slut. I don't know. It's just, like, that's not something, a babyface should say. It just, like, it was just so stupid, and I hated it, and I couldn't watch any of the rest of it. So, you know, TNA, they're never going to get it.
No, they're not.
You know, and you know what? You know why? And why we want it to be so good? A wrestling fans want a good second product that can be competitive with WWE, and that can be fun to watch when WWE isn't fun to watch. It's not like they don't do anything good. You know, they have fun things here or there. You know, and you know there are some shows that I enjoy watching, but you know if you're expecting you know logic and sensible booking, and what have they done to build up the Pope over the last 3 months? I mean, they've been very random. You know, he wins here, he loses here, he gets involved in a cryptic angle that nobody understands. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, how does that build this guy? And he doesn't, you know, like in Kevin Nash pins Samoa Joe.
And then walks out.
Yeah. And why, maybe the Pope can beat Samoa Joe. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it's easy to just give him that little pinfall. But no, you got to have Kevin Nash do it because people think Kevin Nash might leave. So this is a swerve or whatever the reason was for it. And, you know, I don't care that Kevin Nash pinned Samoa Joe at this point. It's fine if you're going to do something with Kevin Nash. Mm-hmm. You know, not that you really need to do a whole lot with Kevin Nash. But if you're going to do something with him, fine. Have him pin Samoa Joe, you know, who cares? That can make sense in a certain storyline, but I don't know. I just I don't get what they're doing, and I don't understand really how anyone there or any fan can really take a serious look at it and consider it that great. Well, go ahead.
Well, anyone thinking that they're you know can somehow be a viable competitor to WWE or be the number two thing or what have you. You know, they just need to realize it's not going to happen. TNA is not going to be able to do that. You know, it's not going to happen. You know, you've waited for years and years and years, and it hasn't happened. So, it's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, people, you know, the TNA, you know, fans say, you know, you're being too hard on them. You know, why don't you criticize WWE for the same thing? You know, as far as, you know, maybe bad booking or, you know, things of that nature. Well, you know, WWE can get away with that because they're number one and they're a huge product and, you know, they've got a built-in humongous fan base that's not going to go away. You know, they're going to have ebbs and flows and ratings and popularity, you know, and, you know, right now it's probably considered a slump because, you know, they're not doing things all that well and there's a lot of things that aren't that interesting and, you know, doing Kane Undertaker again is, you know, not very interesting and no one's really, you know, grabbed onto it, but you know they've got the built-in thing where they've have that safety net where they can screw things up and it doesn't really matter. Where TNA, you know, if they're trying to be that number two competitor or try to get bigger, you got to do things smart and they just do things dumb.
They do well, you know. I mean, obviously TNA or obviously WWE gets criticism because they obviously need a campaign for their fans to support them. Yes. So. So anyone who thinks that WWE doesn't get criticized, they need to stand up and be counted. Yeah.
Hey, well, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Put yourself in the perspective of Eric Bischoff or Dixie Carter or Vince Russo. I know it's a scary thought.
But okay. All right. I'll do it.
Give me 2 minutes here.
Okay.
What, you know, pretend you're one of those people.
Okay.
what are you looking at your product, and you're saying to yourself, man, that is really good, because somehow they've convinced themselves that this is a good product and they're happy with it. So put yourself in their shoes and tell me how they're convincing themselves that this is good.
Okay. I think based on what I've read and what logically makes sense to me, given people's track records and people's experience, I think Dixie Carter doesn't know what's good or bad. She just is, you know, based on her experience, this is what pro wrestling is, and this is how we do it, and that's just the way you do it in 2010. And
so anything TNA would do, it would be good.
I mean, basically. or it would be the right thing to do because that's the philosophy that she knows, and that's the philosophy that people who she trusts tell her is the right philosophy. And based, you know, and that's where she's developed her instincts.
Okay.
That's my guess. Russo, he just fundamentally believes that what he is doing is right.
Even though everything else is saying it is not.
Because apparently he believes that he did this in WWF in 97, 98, and it led to the WWF's huge growth. And that justifies everything that's happened since.
So he's basically saying everyone else is wrong and I am right no matter what.
That something along those lines. I mean, okay. He believes that his vision of pro wrestling will be, you know,
ultimately realized.
Or he doesn't know how to do it any other way, and yeah. You know, he wants to justify his job, I guess.
Okay.
Bischoff, I think, just is there to get paid and to do to make other TV deals and to do what he does and to be a performer when it's called for, and I don't think he cares.
Yeah, okay.
So he'll
say it's a good product, but he could care less one way.
He has to know that it's not good. And I mean, I'm not saying he needs to like publicly criticize it, but you know, there should have been some changes, you know, a long time ago. And there were subtle changes when they moved in. And obviously, the talent being the big change, I guess, obviously, the ring going to four sides. I mean, I guess there were more than just subtle changes. But, you know, obviously, the writing and the booking has been largely the same. It's not quite as frenetic as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little more structured than, at least in the show, you know, isn't, you know, there isn't ever like an instant to the back at every single thing. I mean, the shows are a little bit better, were at least at times better paced and so forth now than they were, you know, in the Russo unfiltered days.
Mm-hmm.
That's my guess is, yeah, he just, he's there to get as much money as he can and to, you know, work with Spike or whatever, you know, I maybe he thought he was going to go in and they were going to be able to get Russo, and then or that he was going to have more of a creative say, or you know, who knows? I mean, mm-hmm. Bischoff himself says he doesn't really have much to do with creative, so no. I don't really understand why he's there other than that. But you know, yeah. But whatever.
Yeah, and it's worth pointing out, you know, that those hoping that TNA is going to be some legit competitor, even in WCW's dying, you know, losing money hand over foot and, you know, hemorrhaging money and just, like, totally collapsing, they were still doing almost double the rating what TNA is doing.
Almost double. You're right. Yeah, I think the lowest they got to, right? The lowest they got to was, like, a 2.3 or 2.4, but that was only a couple times. They really, even in the end, they averaged in the high twos, low threes, so,
and I believe. TNA would kill for a two.
Yeah. Hey, they got a 1.4 last week.
They would kill for a 1.8.
Yeah.
So.
Who would they kill? Yeah. You see, I thought you were going to ask me, Mary Boff kill Dixie Carter, Vince Russo, or Eric Bischoff. So that was going to be a tough one. So.
I'll save that for next year.
Okay. Probably Dixie Carter would be the one that I would boff.
Okay.
Yeah. Probably kill Vince Russo. I guess I would marry Eric Bischoff because he has some money, you know.
Yeah, he's probably the richest. Probably. Well, I don't know. Dixie's pretty rich, isn't she?
That's true, but family. I don't particularly want to boff either Eric Bischoff or Vince Russo.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. All right. So our last topic comes from Gino Marasco from Cage Side Seats. Great website to go to, mm-hmm. as I mentioned before. And he wants us to talk about the old school WCW days. So old school WCW days. Those were the days. Some of them were good.
Yeah.
My favorite WCW days. Well, obviously the Monday Night War era from 95 to 98, maybe even early 99-ish. Those mm-hmm. were some good times. Mm-hmm. The cruiserweights.
Yes.
Love me some cruiserweights. Yep. Love me some Rey Mysterio, Juventud Guerrera, mm-hmm. Billy Kidman even at the time, yep. Ultimo Dragon.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff.
There. Yeah. So they're was kind of the work rates that was kind of the meat of the show. Mm-hmm. And then you had, you know, what was going on with the NWO and the main eventers is kind of, you know, your dessert.
Yep.
Yeah. And usually the dessert was taken from you before you had a chance to finish eating it. So that would build to wanting the dessert, you know, the next show and the next show until people kind of realized, like, hey, we're not really going to get a dessert, so let's move over to the let's move over to the WWF restaurant and we'll see if we can get dessert there. Yeah,
that was good. I like how you did that.
Thanks, I appreciate that.
You know, I just liked the feel, like when Nitro was at its peak and was doing well. Just like the feel that it was, it always felt like a big show. You know the production or just the way the stage looked and things like that. I mean, it looked like it was a cool event like every week that you had to watch. And I enjoyed that. You know, obviously it went downhill and totally lost all of that. But you know, for a while there, it was cool to watch. I think, you know, just they were ahead of the curve and just their, you know, the ring and the stage and all that stuff. So
yeah, which, you know, to give him credit, a lot of that was Eric Bischoff. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, he was obviously, you know, the man in charge then. He made some. You know, he made the TV deal to get WCW on TNT. He got WCW more money for production because they started paying them for you know, television rights fees, I believe. And you know, brought Hogan in and made it bigger and better. And you know, they had a great run. And you know. Did more than anyone else ever did to fight Vince, mm-hmm. and you know, and almost drove, you know, Vince out of business reportedly. So, and that's you know, there's something to be said for that, even if it, you know, kind of went down in flames and ended up being a disaster. But
yeah. They always talked it up very well. You know, just even like when you're first, you know, turning on for Nitro. You know, they talk it up big, and it, you know, like I said, just made it feel like a big deal to be watching that.
And there was so much excitement, and those crowds. I mean, they, you know, they had some hot crowds. I mean, not the WWF didn't, but mm-hmm. You know, I remember you know, when Goldberg, you know, when he won when he won the U.S. title from Raven, yeah. And then when he won it from Hogan. I mean, yeah. Just, you know, those incredible when Flair came back after he'd been gone for a few months and reformed the Four Horsemen. I mean, my goodness. I mean, you know, and obviously, I mean, it was partly because they were, you know, their home territory. I mean, they traveled all over the U.S., but, you know, their prime, you know, they always, I mean, they went to Atlanta, they went to Greensboro, they went to Charlotte. I mean, their territory was a hotbed of professional wrestling for a long time, and those fans had followed that WCW product, you know, under different names, you know, for, you know, years and years and years, and, you know, developed a, you know, very strong, loyal, homegrown fan base that actually ended up leaving wrestling pretty much when WCW was sold to WWF.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And after, you know, once the invasion was exposed as a fiasco, there was no point in having it anymore.
Yep.
So, and, you know, so those fans all left. So, yeah, I miss WCW a lot. You know, it was a punchline for a long time, but, you know, they just had such, you know, terrific matches. And we haven't really even, you know, addressed, you know, the early days of WCW. I mean, the, you know, you talk about, you know, kind of when the name first started being a part of it was, you know, was 89, 90. And you had, I mean, 89 was just an incredible year. You know, the Flair Steamboat, Flair Funk, you know, those great feuds, great Muda and Sting, you know, you had, you know, Luger back when he cared and was great, you know, and then in 90, you know, they brought back Barry Windham from his short-lived WWF stint. You had Arn Anderson back, you know, then you transitioned into 91 and 92. You had the Dangerous Alliance, Vader, you know. Yeah,
Vader and Flair had some great stuff.
Yeah, later 93, but Vader, you know, had some great stuff with Sting and Cactus Jack. And just, you know, there was just, I mean, it was a different promotion. I mean, you know, it was a very different vibe from WWF. And one of my great regrets is that I didn't understand, like, wrestling. I didn't understand, like, what WCW was doing when I was a kid. Like,
yeah.
I was WWF, and that's all I cared about. And I turned on WCW once in a while, and it just didn't appeal to me. I like Sting and a few of the guys, but, I read wrestling magazines, so I knew, you know, who most of the guys were, and I, you know, followed on the main storylines and all that, but, you know, I just didn't appreciate, like, what it was and, you know, some of, you know, the great talent they had and some of, like, the great moments. And, you know, and I wish I would have followed along and watched it, you know, every week, you know, on WCW Saturday Night or whatever, or, you know, Nitro when it first happened, because I would, you know, really, you know, have a greater appreciation of it than I already do. I mean, you know, I've gone back and watched a lot of the pay-per-views and, you know, read about a lot of it. And, you know, so I'm, you know, reasonably well-versed in those years. But, you know, there's no substitute for actually sitting down at the time and having watched it and having loved it.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So that's about all. You can always, if you're interested in, giving us topics that we can, talk about, you can always, email us at wrestlespective@gmail.com. You can hit us up on twitter.com/wrestlespective or facebook.com/wrestlespective, or just go to wrestlespective.com and you can leave a comment on this show or any of our other shows or any of our other fine blog posts we have. So those are all great ways to get a hold of us. And thanks a lot for listening, and we'll talk to you again.